our outside auditor, Brown Armstrong, regarding the audit for calendar year ended December 31st, 2013. Good morning.
Our audit partner, Rosalba Flores from Brown Armstrong, is here today to present the independent auditor's report and financial statements for the year ended December 31st, 2013. This is her third year with Sisera. In your board packet, you have a copy of Sisera's 2013 Comprehensive Annual Financial Reports, what we refer to as the CAFR. Our original is sent off to the county's print services for publication, and in a couple of weeks, you'll receive the nice final hardbound copy in your inbox. Before turning the time over to Rosalba, I'd like to just highlight some of the CAFR changes for 2013. We implemented GASB statements number 61, the financial report entity omnibus, number 65, items previously reported as assets and liabilities, and statement number 66, technical corrections 2012, an amendment to GASB's number 10 and 62. More information on these statements are provided in our second footnote, summary of significant accounting policies. There were no changes to the financial statements as a result of implementing these statements. That's on page 33 if you wanted to look at the second footnote. For our reserve footnote, on pages 49 and 50, we closed out our smooth market value valuation reserve. And as a result, our 2012, some of the reserve numbers were restated. We did this because this reserve balance, nothing ever comes out of it. It only grows with interest. It was a one-time adjustment. I believe it was back in like 1996 when we had to increase our valuation reserves as a result of implementing GASB 25, which is financial reporting for defined benefit plans and note disclosures for defined contribution plans. So the reserve balance was credited on a prorated basis to the employer advanced reserve, both basic and COLA, and it also, this reclass affected our CTA, our contra tracking account balance. We renamed our market stabilization account, MSA, to total deferred return, basically to match the same language as our valuation report. In the actuarial section, starting on page 79, summary of major pension plan provisions. We added the new tiers as well as the identified the government code sections related to PEPRA and AB 340. If I may do so, also for the record, I'd like to take the time to recognize Joelle Lund. I know she's not here today, but she worked closely on this project with me. The CAFR wouldn't have gotten done without her, as well as the PAFR. She, you know, as I said, stated last year, she works behind the scenes, and she's essential in getting this project done. What she does is she takes my documents, whether it's Word or Excel spreadsheets, she puts it in her publication software, and it produces, you know, the look of the CAFR as you see it. She also comes up with the theme of the CAFR, as well as its appearance with photos and so forth. It's a big job, and I want to, you know, thank her for her hard work on this project. And now I'll turn the time over to our audit partner.
Scott has a question.
I had a question on the CAFR.
Yes.
Is it already off to print?
No. Okay. We actually we have something on the actuarial letter that we need to change.
Okay.
That so, John caught this morning. So it's you know, we can't make a lot of changes at
right.
this point, but if there's something like an obvious error of a typo or something, we can change it.
I just had an observation, so if I can
sure.
ask you to turn to page 8. Under the heading Actuarial Funding Status.
Mm-hmm.
First sentence says it's Sisera's funding objective is to meet long-term benefit promises by maintaining a well-funded plan, etc. And when I read that, I was just struck that, I guess it mattered. What got me was whose promise it is. I mean, we've had a few years of litigation now about who's making what representations or promises. It struck me that maybe the better language here might be that the CSERA funding objective is to meet long-term defined benefit obligations. I think I would just recommend avoiding the word promises in light of some of the things that are in issue in our AB 197 litigation. I don't mean to be nitpicky, but it jumped out at me when I read it, so I wanted to share that.
I would agree with that.
That would be a suggestion.
Well, we can certainly change that.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh. I can't remember the document, but didn't we make similar changes to an earlier document?
Yeah.
And I forget what it was. I'm sorry.
Funding policy.
It's one of the policies.
Funding
policy and made the same change. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right, I'll turn the time over to Ms. Alva.
Okay, thank you. I am the lead partner responsible for providing all accounting and auditing services to your association. So what I'd like to do today is just give you a brief overview of our audit process and then go over the areas that we consider significant and we spent a lot of our time during our audit. And then I'll also cover all of our audit opinions that have already been issued and finalized. So in your packets, you should have an outline of the areas that I'm going to be covering. As you know, each year, your organization produces this CAFR, as Vicki stated, and to the users of the financial statements, you're basically asserting that the financial statements are accurate and they're fairly presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. So as independent auditors, it is our responsibility to perform an audit and render an opinion to verify and ensure that these numbers are in fact materially accurate and represent that you are following generally accepted accounting principles. So with that in mind, I'm gonna go ahead and kind of just give you a quick overview of our audit process. We basically first begin by establishing a timeline, and we coordinate this with your staff to ensure that our audit commences and is completed in a timely manner. So we verify schedules with CSERA staff to ensure our interim and final fieldwork audit do not contradict with any vacation schedules. And so once we develop that audit timeline, we provide it to Vicki to review it, and if that plan is okay, we'll kind of go ahead and follow. And that just makes sure that we don't miss any important dates during the conduct of our audit. So a big part of the audit also is when we're coming out and reviewing and getting an understanding of your internal controls. And this basically ensures that all your transactions are recorded and reported correctly. And how we do this is when we come out here and we observe your staff during the conduct of their procedures, making sure that the transactions that are flowing through the system have good segregation of duties, there's good controls. And so if we see any item as an observation, we'll go ahead and communicate that to management. And depending on the outcome of that, it could be documented, you know, as an observation, or it could just be resolved during the audit. So a big part of the audit also is when we are confirming with independent third parties. This is a big process for us because it does help reduce a lot of our audit procedures in that we are relying with organizations that are outside of your association, and we consider this evidence higher that rather than getting information from inside your organization. And so in that process, we confirm with your investment managers, with your custodian, we confirm a sample with your participants to verify the information. And again, that helps us reduce some of our testing that we would normally do if we didn't confirm with these outside parties. So in anticipation of your books being closed, we come out and perform what we call interim testing. And again, this is when we're getting a good understanding of your controls. We're going through performing a walkthrough of all the key accounting areas. And then we're also updating our permanent files to make sure we have all the relevant information for our audit. And then we also update our minutes. And again, we perform the participant data testing. So at that time, if there's any confirmations that come back with information that is different from what was sent out, we'll verify that information with your system and make sure that it's accurate. So once your books are closed, we come back out for our final field work. And at this point, this is when we're substantiating all your amounts and disclosures in your financial statements. And then obviously, once we're completed with that, that helps us, you know, assist the association with reviewing the CAFR. So once our final fieldwork is completed and we've communicated to management whether we found any issues, then we commence with drafting our reports. And then before I talk about the audit opinions that we've issued, I did want to talk to you about our significant audit areas and how we select those. Item number three lists those items. We have investments and related earnings, participant data and actuarial information, employee and employer contributions and benefit payments. And how we select that is because when we are working on our planning, we identify areas that we consider have a higher risk of error, irregularities, or misstatements. And so based on that, and you know, there's other factors, volume of transactions flowing through the systems, just like in the participant data information, dollar amounts such as in investments, obviously being that investments is such a high amount, we're going to focus the majority of our attention to those areas. But you know, these aren't the only areas that we look at, but these are the areas that we consider significant. And then before I cover audit opinions, just a couple of new items also that we did focus a little bit more this year in comparison to other years, and just a little bit of a change in our approach on some of these items. On our confirmations of your investments, we actually did a sampling approach this year, whereas instead of testing 100% of the confirmations, we actually developed a sampling methodology. And what that produced, it was mostly geared for the alternative investments. And what we wanted to do is be a little bit more efficient, knowing that, you know, some of these might not be considered as significant, and instead of confirming 100%, we would employ a sampling methodology. So again, it was mostly on your alternative investments, and the results of that was basically we still ended up confirming about 90% of your confirmations. Another area that was new also was we did do a little bit more in-depth review of your information technology. So we now have an in-house IT specialist that we recently hired. And so he came out and reviewed your pension administration, reviewed general computer controls, and then he also looked into some application controls. So that was a significant change from prior year as well.
I had a question, actually, sure. Before you go on. It was actually on the prior topic. The sampling technique, were those agreed-upon procedures? Did you interact with someone on our end to determine sample universe?
Yes, we actually we discussed with Vicky to obtain all of the alternative investment managers, and then going off of preliminary, because at that point they're not final, preliminary balances, we used the dollar amounts and then the number of investment managers to come up with a sample.
Did you have any interaction with the investment officer on that topic?
I pretty much work with Vicky, but
they were aware of it because we work closely with them as far as who to contact and so forth.
Okay. Oh, I was just reacting to someone made a judgment call somewhere along that continuum about what was more important than not in terms of developing a sample universe, and I'm just trying to figure out how that decision got made. Mm-hmm.
I was okay. I was comfortable with this process. You know, it was less confirmations on our end.
Well, I just want to be sure that on our end has a substantial, if not maybe exclusive, say about what's. I mean, if we're not going to do 100%, then the determination of materiality or significance mm-hmm. should be, I think, something that we have the substantial say in, and not the auditors. Might, I guess, the point mm-hmm. sounds like that was the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and absolutely. Anytime that we have, you know, when we are doing our entrance meeting, we always have our pre-meeting to discuss the scope of our audit. And anytime that we have a change in, you know, what we've kind of done in the past, we always bring it to management's attention and make sure they're comfortable with that.
Just question? But on the calendar, okay. two old CPAs here.
Probably both
agreed upon procedures. One old CPA and Debbie. Agreed upon procedures would not be part of an audit, by the way.
Yeah.
An audit would deal with a random selection from the universe, and the auditor determines that, not management. So agreed upon procedures is typically an engagement where you do certain things that both sides agree upon. An audit, that would be much broader. So there's certainly an interaction. There's certainly a, how do we get access to what we need to look at and do, but it then needs to be independent, and I'm assuming that's what you did.
They're correct, John, yes.
Appreciate it.
So actually my thought was a little different direction, and I think it's a great question, Scott, that you raised, and the two CPAs didn't think to raise it. It was the attorney. But what comes to mind for me is really a question for you. How many of your plans, like that, similar to this that you audit, actually use an audit committee to direct the audit?
That's a great question, and it's actually been coming up a little bit more. I mean, it depends on what suits you best. Some organizations that are smaller feel that an audit committee is not necessary. Others feel that, you know, depending on the size, the issues, you know, the audit committee is going to be suitable for them, because it basically eliminates the discussion at a larger level of some of the issues that you can actually focus on discussing with the audit committee. And once you've discussed them with the audit committee, especially if you have like an internal audit function where you have, you know, a discussion of the internal audit plan, you would discuss that at the audit committee level, and then the audit committee would just bring a summarized of the decisions made to the board for final approval.
So a question like this that we were just discussing would typically be an audit committee.
Correct, and that
decision.
Would be,
which sort of takes it out, becomes more to independent by taking it out of the hands of staff to make those decisions.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So another day.
We've discussed it in the past, and we will revisit it.
Yeah, I mean, it's topic for another day.
And just to add, you know, it's basically the level of involvement, you know, where you would have an audit committee be a lot more involved in the audit than, you know, you would normally have your board. So, okay. And then moving on to the audit opinions, obviously the most important part of our audit is that we render an opinion to you so that you know how your organization is doing. So the first report, which is actually within your CAFR, and that is on beginning on page 18, it's our independent auditor's report. And I talked about the format changes last year, where I like the format now where it clearly divides the different areas. Here's auditor's responsibility, management's responsibility. And then if you go to the second page on the audit report, it provides you, here's our audit opinion. Although it still might not be too clear what the opinion is, it is an unmodified opinion, meaning that it's a clean opinion. There are no issues that we found that we would like to report to you, so you should be congratulated for that. And then just a couple other things, too. In the other matters section, that just kind of breaks out the different areas. As you know, your CAFR is broken out in different areas. The section that we focus the majority of our attention, obviously, is on the financial section. But then you also have your MD&A, which is written by management, your required supplementary information. And then you have supplementary information, actuarial, investment, and statistical. So what this report just basically tells you is our responsibility with regards to the different areas. There are some areas that we review, but we don't provide an opinion, and that's what this report is basically stating and clarifying. And then the other report that we issued, we actually combined a couple of reports in this report to the board. And our first report is our required communication with to you. And basically, because during the conduct of our audit, we're basically working with management on discussing of you know, key issues regarding the audit, we are required by professional standards to communicate to you significant items, such as, you know, if we proposed any significant audit adjustments, if there were adjustments that were immaterial but were not posted. If there were, like Vicki stated, implementation of new standards, or even if we had any disagreements on any accounting matters with the association. Again, the most important thing is that you are informed so that you can exercise your professional responsibilities. So the only item that I have to report this year is the implementation, as Vicki already mentioned, of some of those standards. None of these statements, and I did add that to the report, none of these statements really had a significant impact. So, I mean, they were pretty much implemented, but they really didn't impact the association's financial statements. And then just the other thing I did want to highlight also that is on page 2 of the report is there's a paragraph, it's about middle of the page, called corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There were no proposed significant entries to be made. We didn't find any audit adjustments to propose. And, you know, your association, again, and management, it's a great commendment. Because nowadays, before when you proposed an audit adjustment, you know what they would do is they would just correct it and then move on. Nothing happened here. Well, guess what? Now, if your auditor comes out and proposes to you a significant audit adjustment, it could be it basically could be considered either a significant deficiency or a material weakness that would be reported in your internal control report. So I just wanted to highlight that. There were no adjustments proposed, and so your management, Vicki, should be congratulated for that.
I had a question for you.
Sure.
on the report that's in the Greenbound mm-hmm. packet, not the one in the CAFR. On the internal your internal controls review, it intrigues me that you perform the audit of the financial statements and you consider Cesera's internal controls, but you express no opinions one way or the other as to their viability or whether they're appropriate, right? Mm-hmm. And you said you didn't identify any deficiencies in internal control, but you said material weaknesses may exist that have not been identified. Mm-hmm. How could that be?
Well, because, I know this report, I haven't gone through it, I was going to go through it right now, but I know this report might be a little confusing, and actually the question has came up more than once. We don't test the operating efficiency of your controls. You know, we are focusing on our financial audit and reviewing that your controls are working adequately, but we don't test the operating effectiveness of your controls. And I know earlier the word agreed upon procedures came up. Actually, that would be a separate engagement if you wanted us to look into specifics of your internal control and actually test controls in some areas.
Well, to me, it just all I'm observing is in
no.
This,
I understand. Like
this,
I said,
it was like a page and a half letter.
It's not the first time that it's actually came up. That question that
I'm not. I'm not surprised because it's really. I had at the end. I kind of wondered what the opinion was.
No, you're absolutely right.
Because the letter is really. It's more or less a disclaimer. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, if when you're thinking about operating effectiveness, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, we can't opine on that. So we're hoping that the standards will revise these reports, make it a little clearer in the future. Unfortunately, we kind of have to follow the language. So.
And then the follow-on is the last page in your, it's on page 6 of the green packet. It's entitled Agreed Upon Conditions Report. So in light of John's comments
I'll
earlier
go over
about
those
agreed
right
upon
now.
I just want to be understand what how this relates to the audit and whether and to what extent it would, in your mind, be at odds with what was said earlier, because I think what John said was absolutely correct, so
correct.
I'm just trying to understand.
There's actually a little bit of variation in the language. If you look in the report that you were just referring to on page 5, like you said, this paragraph states that we don't have any material weaknesses, significant deficiencies to report with regards to your internal control. But we noted other matters, and that is a sentence that is on page 5, the very second sentence, where it says we noted other matters that we are reporting to your organization.
Yes.
So that's what this next letter is, and it's not agreed upon procedures, it's agreed upon conditions. So what this is basically is what others refer to as a management letter. It's just basically what it means is, in summarized form, is We don't have any issues with your internal controls. These are just observations that might be opportunities for best practices, you know, things for you to consider. That's all it means. It doesn't mean there's anything that we have a real concern in your controls.
So the title, Agreed Upon Conditions, does this really mean conditions we presented to management with which they agreed?
That they can consider, correct.
You might want to think about the title block, but I'll leave that to you. I found it confusing. That's my point to you.
I have another question, but I'll let you go forward and finish with your presentation of the last two pages.
Okay, thank you. So on page six, what others call report to management. Again, these are just opportunities for improvement. They don't mean there's any issue with your internal controls at all. These are just observations that you might want to consider. So, and I mentioned earlier also that we did do a little bit more in-depth review of the information technology IT. And there were just a couple items that we brought to your attention, again, just as an opportunity to consider. The first one was regarding IT policy. And all it was is that there wasn't anywhere in the actual policy that stated that you're reviewing it on an annual basis. You could be reviewing it on an annual basis, but we just didn't see the date. So all we're recommending is, if you are looking at it on an annual basis, make sure you document that to make sure that you are going over it, pretty periodically and ensuring that your policy does address the information technology's latest issues. And the second one was related to IT change management. And on this one, we found through discussion with your staff that there are procedures, is that there's just not really a formal policy. So that was another recommendation that maybe you want to formalize that into a policy.
I didn't understand what the term change management.
Thank you, Brian.
I read this a number of times, and I thought,
I'm supposed to understand it, but I don't get it.
I'm supposed to know something before I read that.
How about giving us an example of formal change management?
Honestly, it's very IT. I'd be the first one to tell you, I don't disagree with you that it's obviously very confusing. But when you have changes into your system, what we want to do is for you to have a policy on how you track these changes, whether you're using a log, showing the signature of something that got changed.
So are you talking about data changes or software changes or real IT changes?
Real IT changes.
Okay, so we're talking about software type changes.
Yes.
And currently we're using Outlook to keep track of all our changes. So they just want a more sophisticated system.
A little bit more formalized process.
And we're already in the process of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like you see, it's they're very minor stuff, just opportunities for additional improvement.
Almost universally, there is a not sufficient documentation comment if somebody really wants to make that. This sort of fits in that category.
It's never enough.
Yeah,
right.
No, absolutely.
Never enough. So I just had a question on the last page, which was the prior year comment. And it's the very last page in the green book. It says status of prior year agreed upon conditions and recommendations. So this would be something that was noted in last year's report, that every year they put this in the current year and put the status of the update. This was something that had occurred, I want to say 3 years in a row, where there were exceptions in this entry age data, and it's a data problem. And it had something, as it was explained to us last year, had something to do with the conversion of data from one system to another.
Yes.
Okay. And my first question is, so I'm assuming since it didn't appear on page 7 that you tested another 60 participants this year
and found
no exceptions. Okay. And so then my second question is with the management response here on the last page. So Sarah, IT staff will export converted data for non-retired members from CPAS, including the entry age currently stored in CPAS. Correct entry age will then be recalculated outside of CPAS. So this is the current year status of this item, meaning that it still really hasn't been done.
Actually, to clarify, yeah, the management response is actually from prior year.
Oh, that's the
it
prior.
It remains mm-hmm. intact.
Okay.
Yeah, so your actual condition, recommendation, and management response is intact from what was mm-hmm. reported mm-hmm. last year. And so then you go into your current year status, and that's where we give you the
update. So staff
update.
Is currently in the process of reviewing the results of the queries and is correcting any discrepancies.
Mm-hmm. Past.
So, no, that's the current status.
The current status.
Right.
Well, but they had, but no discrepancies were noted. Right?
Correct.
So okay. I guess my general, maybe this is a staff question, but my general question is, so have we actually completed the project that was identified last year of this export and checking of the data, or is that still ongoing?
Jessica, I don't know if you want to chime in because we've discussed it, but it's my understanding it's still ongoing.
It's still ongoing, but the majority of it has been validated. It's just a very complex project, so we're taking our time to not only do the age of entry, but kind of looking at the whole file itself to make sure make sure everything's going to be correct from this point forward. So it's a lot of staff hours to do it, but the majority of them have been reviewed.
Can you give us an idea of what percentage we're at?
I say we're probably about 70-75%.
So we still have 30% of participants that have not been verified,
right, and these
validated.
Would be like deferred, those from the past. The most current ones, these are older individuals, the most current ones, remember, as they are now in our system, we have like a triple check where we are looking at the age of entry. So these are going to be the older ones from the past. These are most of the audit exceptions, most of the ones that they do find are ones more from the past. Mm-hmm. 90s, you know, early 2000s.
Which, when they find that exception, means that for one way or another, their retirement benefit actually is being paid incorrectly?
Well, when they actually retire, we do validate the inventory. We do look to see if there are any corrections that need to be made when they are retiring. So
okay.
That is handled or caught when they are going out.
Okay.
So the issue is contributions during.
So it's the contribution rates. Okay, thanks.
And there's at least one person in my department. The issue came up. It was an age of entry, but it was where she had, at the time the county was doing it, if you were going to take maternity leave, you basically quit and then were rehired. And it was a mess. They don't do it anymore. And that was corrected because she was treated as being as her rehire date as the age of entry and not her original one. So there were different, it wasn't just that somebody comes into the system and we got the wrong age at the beginning. There were other things that could cause these issues. So.
Yeah.
Just for my own edification so I can clarify it in my head, when you item two, condition two, IT change management, which we talked about earlier. I wrote down what I think you're saying. I want to know if I'm correct. So what you're saying is documenting IT changes as they occur and then developing a written procedure with those changes and then that possibly going into policy later on. But is that kind of the stepping stones that you're saying needs to be done with the IT thing?
In the recommendation, correct.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Correct. Now I got it clear in my head.
Any other questions in this report?
Thank you for the report.
Thank you.
And I would like to thank Vivian and her staff and Joelle formally for their hard work. This is a major accomplishment every year for that
ditto,
staff.
Ditto.
Good job, guys.
And you beat me to it. That's what I was going to
end. Sorry.
Stole okay.
One other thing. For anybody in the system, including us, if you want to know what's going on and what we do and how we do it, this document is a wonderful thing to go through. Page by page, I've done it every year, and this year I'm at about page 50. It got started late, but it also refreshes me. I have forgotten how many tiers we administer. We have 13 different tiers. I don't know if you guys realize that. 13 different tiers that we administer to. And when I retired in 99, there were three tiers. There were three. So that's how much it's increased. And PEPRA has brought on us. So it's really a worthwhile document. And I agree with Deborah and everybody else. Thank you. It's wonderful. Don't stop it. Please keep it coming every year.
I'd just like to compliment Brown Armstrong. I got to the to participate in a fraud interview this year.
Oh, good.
This is the first time.
Yeah.
And I forget.
I did that 3 years ago.
I forget the woman that that conducted the interview, but very done very professionally and
might
very
have
well.
Been Brooke or Ashley.
I
it was Ashley.
Ashley.
Was it?
It was Ashley, yes.
Done very well,
oh,
very
good.
Professional.
Thank
and,
you, appreciate it.
I was very impressed.
Thank you. I'll let her know.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And